Hello, and it's over and over and over again. We're live, and this is the Olympiacos versus Arsenal pre-match warm-up show. Welcome back to my channel, over and over again, the Positive Arsenal channel. Just first of all, I want to apologise for this show not happening last night as was originally arranged. I just wasn't feeling very well at all last night, so I had to postpone that. But thankfully, I'm feeling a bit better today, so we can get the show done. This is going out live currently on Facebook, on YouTube and on Twitter, and it will be out on Spotify and other podcast platforms as well later on. So wherever you're watching, please give it a like. Please come over to YouTube as well and subscribe to the channel. It does help it to reach a bigger audience. I say give the show a like as well. It was meant, obviously, last night we were going to have a few more guests in, but obviously, because it's during the day today, a few people are at work and stuff. But thankfully, I have got Costa from the Gate 7 International podcast. How you doing, Costa? You all right?
Hi, mate. Good morning. Good afternoon to everybody.
Yeah, so sorry to have to cancel last night, sort of quite late on, really. I wanted to see if I could maybe struggle through, but it wasn't going to happen. So, but thankfully, you can make it on today, which is good. It's good to have you on.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks very much for having me on. Excited for the game later.
Yes, no, I'm sort of excited and nervous as well. I think it's probably, in the overall scheme of things, maybe slightly more important for us as a club maybe to get through. But I guess from your point of view, you're going to want to go as far as you can in the competition as well. Just before we start, I mean, just give us a little bit of a sort of introduction on yourself, really. You know, how's Olympiacos? I mean, is that, obviously, are you from Greece originally? Is that what it's all about?
So actually, I'm a Londoner, but I was born in London and I grew up south of the river. Dulwich Hamlet supporter, so for those local fans, big up Dulwich Hamlet. I spent first 20-21 years of my life in the UK, studied in the UK, did my undergrad there, and moved out to Belgium, and I've been living in Belgium about a third of my life now. Brussels based. My dad took me to an Olympiacos game when I was very young. Actually, funny story, the first football game I went to growing up was an Arsenal game. It was Arsenal Everton. I think I was 4 years old at the old Highbury Stadium. And I think it was one of the most boring experiences I ever had. I think George Graham was manager at the time. It was like, you know, flat back four, not very attractive, Steve Bould at the back and long balls, you know, different type of era in English football. And, you know, I wasn't very excited about football, but then my dad took me to a game in Greece, I think probably that summer. He took me to my first Olympiacos game. And the moment you step into the ground and you're surrounded by just the fans who are bopping up and down before the game started, the atmosphere is really something else. For anybody that travels to Greece, if you ever get an opportunity to go to an Olympiacos game or generally to like a big Greek football match or a European night, there's nothing like it. And that really, it just sucked me in. And my family's full of Olympiacos fans, and Olympiacos is my team. I've been to a lot of games at home, away, following the club. It's like we say in Greek, it's following the club. It's like a sickness. It's like a bug. You can never get it off you.
Yeah, no, I think it's the same. It's the same over here, really. I mean, you know, as much as, you know, disappointing results and stuff, you get upset and you get annoyed, but it's nothing you can do. You're stuck with it, aren't you, unfortunately, through good and bad times. And it's just a matter of what we have to live with, I guess, isn't it, as a football fan, I suppose. But I guess, you know, it's not been too bad for you, has it, as an Olympiacos fan? Certainly domestically, you've won a lot of trophies, haven't you, in recent years?
Well, actually, yeah, my generation and those younger than me, we've really enjoyed, I would say, the best period in the club's history. around the 80s and late 80s, we were without a championship for over 10 years. They referred to those years as the stone era in Greek, where we weren't winning anything. And then, you know, you had players like Stelios Giannakopoulos, who played for Bolton in the Premier League some years, and Predrag Djordjevic, this crop of players that came through and started a dynasty where we were basically winning the title and domestic championships year on year end, like in a row, back to back. I don't even remember like how many titles we've won. I think we've won something like 46 championships, and the others have won like, I don't know, 10 together or something stupid. So we really dominate the league, and it's really a golden era in the club's history. And, you know, to that extent, we're beyond the Greek championship. I mean, we're 16 points clear now at the top of the table. The league title's all but over this year, and these, you know, Europe is a great opportunity for the club.
I mean, do you think that maybe, I mean, we'll come on to it in a minute when we talk about the match. Do you think that, you know, due to that fact that you are so clear at the top of your league, and like you said, the league title basically won, there's probably a bit less pressure on you in Europe now. You can go out there, you haven't got to worry about resting players. You can basically go out with your full strength team, can't you, and really throw everything into the Europa League as well, because like you said, the league's over and done with, isn't it, really?
I wish we could put our full strength team out. Unfortunately, we're coming into this game with half a centre back. Our situation at the back is dire. We don't have a fully fit centre back going into the game. We were expecting that Sokratis and Hussein Ubar would line up at the back, but Bar came off with a niggly back injury on the weekend. Sokratis has been playing with a shoulder injury the last couple of weeks. So, you know, I've just heard that Hussein Ubar isn't sure. He's not a certainty for tonight. So we might have to drop Jan Envia back to play at centre back, which is we're going in with a makeshift defence, unfortunately. So I really wish we could put out our full strength team to really, you know, make it a proper test, you know, of our full strength against a team like Arsenal, a great club, with great players. But okay, it is what it is. I think nobody's really gonna give us stick if we get knocked out over the two legs. We're clearly the underdog going into the game. I see it as a complete flip side for Arsenal. I think there's a lot of pressure on Arteta going into the game from what I've been listening. I know that you've got Spurs on the weekend as well, and it's, you know, it's a jam-packed schedule for Arsenal, and these next three games are really quite crucial for him. And like I said, I think if we win, like, and we manage to progress, you know, they'll look at us as the dark horse for this competition, and we'll get plaudits all over Europe and in Greece. And in Greece, it will be a crazy party. And in England, if you guys get knocked out again, I can only imagine the back pages on the newspapers the next day.
Yeah, no, you're right. There is a lot of pressure on the club and on Mikel Arteta in particular coming into, like you said, these big three games we've got over the next week, the two European games, and like you said, the game against Spurs at the weekend. And I feel as though, obviously, last year you did beat us in the previous round, actually, wasn't it? You knocked us out winning at the Emirates after extra time. And I think maybe at that particular time, Arteta was new into the job. And I think everybody kind of accepted that, you know, okay, yeah, it was disappointing, really disappointing. But I think everyone could accept it then. But now I think a year on, the fact that we're struggling in the league, really, you know, mid-table, not where we expected to be, it's put a lot more pressure on us. And, you know, you're saying that you've got the injuries, which maybe is a good thing from our point of view, perhaps. But that adds even more pressure then, doesn't it? Because if we don't get the right result, when you've got a couple of key players missing, then that puts even more pressure on us, doesn't it? So it doesn't always work like that. And sometimes, you know, when there's injuries, players step in, don't they, and step up to the mark and come in and do a job. So I'm not necessarily expecting that's going to make our job any easier, particularly over the two games, but we'll see. There's a comment here from Anthony. He says about Stelios scored the winner against Arsenal for Bolton in the FA Cup. Yes, he did, actually. I remember that game. He did score. I think he had a habit of scoring against Arsenal, actually.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, we tended to lose quite a lot to Bolton in them days.
I'll tell you a funny anecdotal story, actually. I know Stelios personally, and we had him on our podcast a few months ago, and he told us a story because he had this habit of scoring against Arsenal.
Yeah.
And he told me that one time when they went to play Arsenal, I think it was still at Highbury, they were warming up before the game, and one of, you know, the Bolton balls went into the Arsenal half when they were training, and Stelios went over to get the ball, and Cesc Fabregas brought the ball over, and he was like, Stelios told us, Cesc goes to him, Stelios, please, mate, don't score against us again today.
Yeah. You probably did, no doubt, because I say you did tend to, you had a good record of scoring against us. I say Bolton in them days were a difficult team to play against, particularly for us, it seemed to be. They had a good results against us. So, you know, I remember that FA Cup game in particular when he scored that late goal. I think we were the holders at the time as well, and he scored to knock us out, which was quite disappointing. But yeah, I guess it's just one of those things. Luckily, he's not playing tonight. Otherwise, I'd be more worried if he was playing against us. But yeah, I mean, in terms of obviously your recent form, then I know that you recently won 15 league games in a row, didn't you?
No, we've played, I think it's 25 games this season, drawn 5-1. Was it? Yeah, 25. We've won 20, drawn 4, and lost 1. And yeah, we lost to Panathinaikos about 5 or 6 games ago. We lost to them 2-1 away.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that's good form to be coming in to the game. I know, obviously, you kind of, in the last round of the Europa League, you had a similar kind of situation to us in that you needed a late goal, didn't you, to get through?
In the last game?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a crazy, crazy couple of games against PSV. The first game, we won 4-2 at home, and I mean, you know, with 2 away goals, it's you know, they're still a match ahead, and went 2-0 up. They went 2-0 up, and it was an 87th minute goal from Hassan, super sub, that came on and kind of got us over the line in the end. So it was dramatic again, and we do have this tendency to come up with late goals. I have spoken on some other shows about one of our main strengths, which is, in my eyes, our mental toughness and the fact that it's a very together squad. You know, it's the same manager that we've had for 3 years. He hasn't made many changes to the squad over the years. I should remind or let you guys know that when Pedro Martins came in 3 years ago, he was coming in at a time where we were, you know, we'd lost the league. To AEK, I think it was. AEK Athens won the league when he came in, and we got rid of 26 players at the end of that season. And Pedro Martins came in, and it was his team essentially that he started building. And the first season, he didn't win the league, but we played very attractive football, probably the best football we've played in the last 3 years. And at Olympiacos, if you lose like one match, the pressure's on immediately. It's something that probably fans in the UK, they won't understand, because, okay, the level is not comparable, but really you lose a game in Greece and the pressure's on the manager, the pressure's on the players. We've sacked managers with an unbeaten record because we haven't played good football. That's the kind of club it is. There's just like the pressure is mad. And, he came in, the club and the board made a decision to keep him on because we were playing good football, and it's borne fruit. You know, we saw the results last year. We won the double. We got to the last 16 of the Europa League. We could have progressed in the Champions League. So, you know, it's really quite extraordinary, the fact that we have a manager now for 3 years, and everybody knows their role. Even players, you know, that we consider kind of star players that have been sitting on the bench, they accept it. They don't whinge, they don't moan. They come on for 20 minutes, and in 20 minutes they come on and they change the game. So I, as an Olympiacos fan, when we get to the 80th minute, I know something's gonna happen. Like in the next, like until the whistle blows, if we're behind or if we're chasing a goal, I know that there's going to be some subs coming on, and Martins is going to make some tactical changes, and something's going to happen. I have that expectation during the match.
I mean, that's great because, I mean, we've been, as Arsenal fans, we've been maybe complaining about the fact that under Arteta, actually, we don't score that many late goals and we don't seem to make enough attacking substitutions in the closing stages of games when we're chasing it. I mean, we did obviously get through the last round against Benfica with a late goal. That was 88th minute, 87th minute, like yourselves. But I must admit, that was out of the blue in a sense, because that's not something that we've been doing regularly at all in the 18 months or so that Mikel Arteta has been in charge. I'm not quite sure why we haven't got many late goals at all. We seem to run out of steam a little bit towards the end of games, actually. So that's a little bit of a concern. If you guys come on strongly at the end, you know, that could be where the game's maybe won and lost, perhaps, possibly then. Because I say we don't seem to... If we're losing a game with 10 minutes to go, I don't feel optimistic that we're going to come back into it. And most of the time we haven't done. I say the Benfica game was an exception. We did get the late goal there. But I'm not really sure that Benfica were a particularly great side, if I'm honest. And, you know, we made the most of that and managed to get through. But, yeah, we don't tend to score a lot of late goals. I think he's Lambros. He's from your podcast, isn't he?
What's up, Labro?
He's popped up there. He says, obviously, we've barred out for how much trouble are we in. I mean, yeah, we just touched on that before, didn't we? I mean, I'm not sure. We'll see about that. And I think he was on Anthony's channel. I think it was yesterday, wasn't he? I saw that as well, which is good. So, I mean, just quick, before we kind of move on a little bit, just sort of talk about your podcast, obviously, as well, because you're doing some sort of Olympiakos and Greek football content, aren't you, over there?
Yeah, so it's the Gate 7 International podcast. It's there are four of us, basically. Well, I should give a shout out to the three boys. So it's Ari Boulibasis, who's in Maryland near the Washington, D.C. area in the United States. Peter Thompson, who's in Canada. And Lambro, who's in Geneva, Switzerland. So those guys, they started this initiative during the lockdown. And they really tapped into a niche in a sense that there was really no English-speaking form of media covering Olympiakos issues online at all. Like, we're light years behind what's happening in the UK. Like, the amount of Arsenal, like, fan TV channels is just, like, ridiculous. Yeah. So, you know, those guys, they took the initiative, and we got to know each other, actually, on social media channels, and got close, and they invited me to join the initiative, for which I'm very grateful. And like I said, what we're all trying to do together is provide that platform for English speaking Olympiakos fans. We want to make the club more of an international brand. And it is an international initiative where we're four people in four different countries. And you know, at the same time, we want to bring the Greek diaspora and the Olympiakos fans closer to the domestic fans, and really, you know, create that connection between Olympiakos fans across the world through the podcast.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, and I say, I've seen bits and pieces of what you're doing. It's great stuff as well. And like you said, you know, I suppose, you know, we may be thinking this country, because we've got so much, like you said, there's so many channels for all clubs really in England, that you maybe just expect that's what it's like everywhere else. But like you said, it isn't necessarily the case. So it's great that you guys are doing this as well. And like you said, trying to reach out. I mean, what's the significance of Gate 7? Is that part of the stadium?
Yeah, so Gate 7 is traditionally where the ultras sit, so where the hardcore fans sit. It's behind the goal. The significance of Gate 7 comes from tragedy, actually. So when you refer to Gate 7, you really refer to all Olympiakos fans. Gate 7 tragedy was in 1981. It's basically the equivalent of it's our Hillsborough. 21 people died in a AEK Olympiakos game in 1981. I think we won that game 6-1. I wasn't born then. I was born in 86. I think we won that game 6-1, and towards the end of the game, fans started to go out, and the gate was closed, and there were too many fans inside, and they trampled on each other. 21 of them lost their lives. 20 Olympiakos fans and one AEK fan. Those were back in the days where actually fans from different teams could sit next to each other. That's not the case today. The atmosphere in Greece is It just doesn't allow that. We're not mature enough, unfortunately, and we don't have proper governance going into games in terms of, you know, providing good security for away fans coming to games. There's still a lot of fan violence, organized crime. Back in those days, it was still allowed. And yeah, that's where Gate 7 comes from. It comes from that tragedy that really brings not only Olympiacos fans together, but all Greek fans in that sense.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's it does sound very similar. So obviously what we had at Hillsborough a few years after that, actually, what happened obviously over here. So I wasn't aware of that, actually. So no, that's must have been a big deal. I mean, did that change the stadium and stuff like that? Was the stadium redeveloped and stuff in the light of that?
No, the stadium was rebuilt around the Olympics in 2004. So they, it's still the same location. They literally just they flipped the stadium around a little bit. So it's not exactly the same position it was before. So we have a very modern stadium today. If you look at Gate 7 when you come out as a player, or when you enter the stand, and if there aren't any fans there are actually 21 seats in Gate 7 that form a 7, and that's a tribute to those fans that lost their lives. So there are, you know, the whole stadium's obviously red and white, the chairs are red, and then those 21 seats are in black for those fans.
Oh, fantastic! I mean, it's one of the state. Arsenal played there a few times. I've never been there, but I've seen obviously the games on the TV, and the atmosphere in the stadium always has struck me as being something a bit different. You know, certainly different to the atmospheres that you get in English stadiums.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It's really unbelievable. I tell all my friends growing up in the UK, or anyone I meet internationally, is like, people talk about Boca Juniors, River Plate, you know, like Inter Milan, AC Milan, Arsenal, Tottenham. It's like, if you haven't been to an Olympiacos Panathinaikos game, or if you haven't been to an Olympiacos game in the Champions League, you haven't experienced football like as you should.
Yeah, no, it's always been, I know we seem to come up against you guys quite a lot, and it's always when I think, oh yeah, I'd like to do that one day, and I'm sure I will do it at some stage, obviously when fans are allowed back in and we're allowed to fly to other countries a bit more easier. But yeah, it is something that I've always been wanting to do, just for the fact that I've seen it on the TV and the atmosphere just looks incredible. And I know people that's been to some of the previous games and have said the same. So it is something that's maybe on the bucket list, one of the things on the bucket list to tick off. But we seem to have drawn against you quite a lot in recent years, so I don't know how many more times we're going to face each other in Europe. I guess it might happen again, which kind of leads me on maybe to a next little section I wanted to just look at briefly. Like I said, we have met each other quite a lot, haven't we, over the years, recent years, beginning in the Champions League. And the first kind of few times that we met you guys, we tended to win at home and you tended to beat us away. In fact, it was one of the games that we never expected to get anything from, actually. I mean, was you at any of those sort of games in the Champions League that we played?
I was at both games in the 2015 campaign. So the game that we won at the Emirates 3-2, I was at that game on crutches. It was an unbelievable game. I think it was the first game we ever won in England.
It's the first time you've beaten us at home. I know that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was. I mean, I've been to Man United. I've been to Chelsea. You know, nights where we lost 4-0 at Old Trafford, 3-0, then another 3-0 defeat at Stamford Bridge. You know, we just in England, it's just not been great. But that night was just magic. I mean, it was an unbelievable game. We scored from a direct corner kick. And then, you know, Finn Bogason got that goal right after you equalised 2-2. And I remember throwing my crutch and losing it, and then somebody bringing it to me at the end of the game. Like, no, I mean, that was incredible. And I couldn't go to the game last year with the dramatic late goal. I was also at the game at Karaiskagi when Giroud scored the hat-trick. That was the same season, 2015, where I remember leaving the Emirates and talking to some Arsenal fans, and, you know, I think Arsenal fans were really, you know, down and out and thought campaign's over, and I had that niggling feeling, you know, that we're playing Arsenal last game at home. That's going to be tricky. And I went to that game and it was Olivier Giroud hat-trick. Jesus Christ. I know he wasn't that popular for you guys, but I mean, that night he was the hero. And you needed to win that game 3-0 as well. You needed a 3-0 win to go through, and it was bloody 3-0, and we couldn't even get one goal. But it is what it is. It's football. We've played each other 10 times, I think. 10 times in the last however many years, and it's 5 wins for you and 5 wins for us. So it's even, Stephen.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. And obviously that 3-0 victory there when Giroud got the hat-trick, I think that was the first time that we'd won away in Athens against you guys. We'd lost all the previous games. And since then, actually, that's the first of 3 wins in a row, because we did win last season, obviously, the away leg before losing at home. And then we did obviously win in your stadium a couple of weeks ago to beat Benfica. Which is strange how it works out, isn't it? We have to play in your stadium our home game in the last round, and then we get drawn against you in the next round, which is a bit strange. But maybe that'll help us in terms of the fact that, you know, we'd be more familiar with the stadium and stuff like that and the travel. There's a question here from Anthony, actually. He says, obviously, last night, you guys were speaking about how important the fans are, which we sort of touched on just a minute ago. He said, love to know Costa's thoughts on the lack of fans tonight making a difference. Yeah, I mean, I guess it will do, won't it? I think it has done all season. I mean, what are your sort of thoughts on that, particularly ahead of tonight's game?
It is what it is. I think obviously going into a game like this, you want the 12th man to back the team. But honestly, I think the players are used to it now. I really do think that they're used to playing under these conditions. Like you said, Arsenal, on the other hand, they've developed a good record traveling to Karaiskaki the last couple of games against us. A lot of the same players, they know the stadium well from last season. It's unfortunate. I mean, fans without football at the end of the day is nothing. I watch Olympiacos every game because they're my team, but honestly, I'm not watching Match of the Day. I'm not watching any other football. I'm barely interested in watching Champions League. Just like there's nothing interesting about it anymore without the fans. And I really hope that, you know, UEFA are talking about revamping the Champions League and making it a more exclusive club. And it's like, these guys, they need to wake up and just respect the fans more. I mean, in terms of the impact on us, I think the fact that we're not going to have fans at the Emirates is perhaps something we don't consider enough, because last year we had 6,000 strong fans of Olympiacos traveling to the Emirates. And I remember in 2015 as well, I think we were 4,000 or 5,000. Mm. And we can make a lot more noise than you boys over there. I mean, the atmospheres in general are generally quite tame. And the away fans, the ones that travel away, every single one of them's a nutter. We're all crazy. Like, the ones that we travel and go away, we're there before kickoff and we're there until after. And from minute one, we're screaming and singing and supporting the team and getting behind them and whistling at the home team. That's mad. So it sucks. No fans, but honestly, I think the players are used to it.
Yeah, no, I suppose you're right. I mean, by now, I mean, it's been a year or so, hasn't it? Or coming up for a year without no fans now. I guess the players are perhaps used to it. But it does make a difference, I think. Like you said, maybe your fans coming to the away leg, that probably, because I remember last year, you know, your fans were great, wasn't it? The atmosphere you generated. And like you said, the game in 2015 as well. So, you're probably right, actually. That might have more impact in the second game than it maybe does in the first game, perhaps. But I guess we won't really. It's difficult to know, isn't it? Because the fans are not going to be there, so we don't know what impact it would have had, what difference it would have made. We're never going to really know. But I agree with you. I do think that watching football without fans in a stadium is just not the same, is it?
But there's, I think, even like on your side, if it gets tricky for Arsenal, you know you get that atmosphere in the English grounds as well when it's quite quiet, you know, and you can almost hear the fans murmuring and kind of not comfortable, and then that sinks into the players as well. And for the return fixture, if it if after today's game it's still quite tight, you know, that's a factor as well. So I think it, you know, the knife cuts both ways.
No, I agree. And I've said this on this channel earlier on in this season, that the fact there's been no fans in our stadium this year has probably helped ease the pressure on Mikel Arteta, actually, because particularly before Christmas, when we lost four home games in a row, the atmosphere in the stadium with fans in would have been quite hostile and toxic towards the end of that run. And sometimes that puts pressure on the club to maybe look at the manager situation. And certainly, I don't know what it's been like in Greek football, but certainly in the Premier League this season, there's been a far lot less managers getting sacked than normally would have been the case. I think there's only been two managerial changes in the Premier League, maybe three. And usually by this point, there's quite a lot more than that. And I do feel maybe without the pressure of the fans in the stadium, it's probably helped certain managers maybe keep their jobs a bit longer. And I definitely think it's helped Mikel Arteta. And yeah, so you maybe look at it, it's not always necessarily a bad thing in certain circumstances. Yeah. And I agree, the atmosphere in the English stadiums is nowhere near what it used to be going back 20, 30 years. It's really subdued generally now anyway. And at the Emirates in particular, the atmosphere is nowhere near like it was at Highbury. I know I don't think we ever met you guys when we were still at Highbury, actually, in European competition, but I think it's all been since we moved to the Emirates. But yeah, the atmosphere has definitely gone down since then, and I think it has in English football in general. So maybe not having fans, it might not necessarily be such a disadvantage in for English clubs, maybe, for that reason, because maybe the atmosphere does turn quite quickly as soon as you go a goal down. Like you said, you can hear that kind of almost a groan in the stadium, and I don't think it helps the players, and it certainly doesn't. It's not going to help you to get a result, is it? And you know, there's some clubs in England maybe where they have missed the fans. Liverpool, I think, maybe, for example, probably one that have. I'm not really sure it's necessarily been a negative impact on us, actually, in our performances, because I don't think that's always helped. There's a couple of comments in here. We've got S. Featley TV. I'd like to think we can win, but the way we've been playing and under this manager, I'm not confident. 1-1 draw, he said in his preview. Arteta's not meeting Arsenal standards, hence why I have no confidence. Yeah, I kind of tend to agree with that to a certain degree. I think Arteta has been a little bit underwhelming so far, if I'm slightly honest. And Ryan from Mr. Arsenal podcast, get where you come from entirely. I do think we'll scrape a 2-0 win. Well, we'll come on to that a little bit later on. I mean, I just wanted to maybe touch on, obviously, last season's meeting against you guys. When we got that late goal at your place in the first leg to win 1-0, did you think that was it then? Did you still think you had a chance coming down to London for the second game?
No, I didn't think it was over. I think I was in the minority. But honestly, looking at how we played against how we played in the Champions League last season against Tottenham, we got a 2-2 draw against Tottenham, and Tottenham weren't bad last year, right? There was the change with from Poch to Mourinho. Yeah. We played well in, you know, we were 2-0 down against Tottenham, and even when we were 2-0 down, I had that feeling that it's not over, we're going to get back in this, and we clawed it back into 2-2. And when we played Bayern Munich at home, we lost 3-2, but I can tell you that was the away game where they suffered more than any other game they played in Europe last season. If you look at the games, I mean, they won it in the end. If you look at their games away from home and the results that they got, the game that they played against us at home last season was the hardest away game that they had. So, you know, it was disappointing to lose 1-0 the first leg last year. But, you know, Olympiacos, I always have this feeling that we're going to get a goal. So I knew that we would go to the Emirates, we'd get a goal, and then, you know, we wait and see. So I wasn't pessimistic, I wasn't optimistic. I was, you know, I had confidence in the team. We qualified through three rounds to get to the Champions League. When you qualify through three rounds, that means you're a good team, but you deserve to be there. I had faith that we could do something.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes it's with the way the European football works, obviously the away goals and that kind of stuff, you know, I think many Arsenal fans, and me included, believe that when we won the first leg 1-0, you think that's a great result. You've got an away goal, you haven't conceded, and you just need to keep the clean sheet at home and you're through. And I think that was maybe we went into that game in that mindset a little bit. And I think that's an Arteta mindset anyway. And of course, you did score in the second half of that game and took it to extra time and all that late drama, you know, when you scored late on and then we should have equalised and it was quite dramatic at the end. And it was quite a obviously, I'll say it was disappointing for us to lose that game, but I think we maybe had a little bit more understanding of it at the time, and maybe we didn't accept the defeat as badly as we probably will do if the same thing happens this time round, I think, because of the extra pressure that maybe is on Arteta at the moment with our league position, as I said, and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think it's going to be... I still think it's going to be two difficult games. We'll come into it a little bit more later on, but, yeah, I'm not... You know, I felt last year maybe... I don't know whether the players went into it with that mindset, but I certainly felt we'd done the hard job winning away, and then it was just a matter of finishing it off at home, which... Unfortunately, we wasn't able to do, but hopefully we, you know, that lesson will be in their mind, in Arteta's mind, in the players' minds as well. And hopefully, you know, we won't make similar mistakes again, but, you know, we'll see. We've been slightly better defensively this season, actually, but we're still likely to make mistakes. I don't know whether you saw our game at the weekend against Burnley, the goal we conceded there.
I heard about it. I didn't see it, but I heard about it.
Yeah, and I mean, that isn't, unfortunately, I mean, that was probably the worst of a lot, but that's a recurring theme for us recently. We've been gifting teams goals. You know, we did it against Benfica in the last round. We've been doing it in the Premier League quite a lot. And unfortunately, in European games, if you give the other team a goal, especially if you're in a home game, and you give it in away goals away, it's difficult. It makes it more difficult to get past, doesn't it? And, you know, that's what my concern is going into this game, actually, that the mistakes that we're making at the back. Teams haven't had to work very hard to score. We're not conceding that many goals, but the goals we can see, the other team haven't had to work for particularly. We've gifted it to them quite a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you said there, you know, you expect your team to score anyway. So, you know, the likelihood is there's going to be goals perhaps over these two games. But we'll see. So we'll get on to that a little bit later on. Also, this is something I tend to do more when we're playing in the Premier League, because there's a lot more players that's played for both clubs. But we'll just briefly have a look at this, because there are a couple on the list. Obviously, the main one, the first one we want to talk about is obviously the guy that's currently playing for you guys, just recently left us, of course, Socratis. What have you made of his performances for you guys since he's joined? He's played a few games, hasn't he, already?
Yeah. I think he's played 5 games. Papa Socratis, as I call him. Funnily enough, he came in as a third choice. As a third choice centre back, our pairing has been Ruben Semedo and Endusonu Ba. Normally, those two would line up tomorrow. You know, he's coming off of a long period where he hasn't played. I was very upset the way he was treated at Arsenal. I thought, you know, I know he was criticised that. You know, the way Arteta likes to play, the way Arsenal likes to play, you like to play out the back, and you know that's not his strength. He's a no nonsense centre back. You know, he's the kind of guy that makes a big tackle and then he celebrates it like he scored a goal. Yeah. And everybody loves the passion. You know, and I remember watching Socratis play as an 18-year-old centre back in a Champions League game where he played for Ajax against AC Milan, and AC Milan were the champions. They'd won the Champions League the season before. They came to Athens to play Ajax in the first game of that campaign. And Socratis made his debut that game because their centre-back was injured. And he was marking Shevchenko. Anyone remember Andrei Shevchenko? He's one of the one of the top elite strikers we've seen in Europe the last 10, 20 years. Shevchenko didn't touch the ball that game. And Ajax won 1-0. And I remember watching him thinking, bloody hell, this guy's good. And then, you know, the rest is history. I mean, he joined Genoa, made it to AC Milan, played for Borussia Dortmund under Klopp for many years. His, you know, you look at his career and the clubs that he's played for, including Arsenal, by the way. I think, you know, his the list of clubs that he's played for, it speaks for himself, and it's very, you know, we feel very happy to have him as part of our team.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I was quite disappointed with the way he was treated, actually. There was a few players maybe the same were left out of the squad completely. And I always felt that he was a reliable defender who could do a job. You know, like you said, he's a little bit old school, isn't he, the way that he plays, which, you know, we maybe needed at the time. I thought, you know, he came in 2018. He was one of the first signings when Unai Emery took over. And, you know, he played regularly, actually, under Unai Emery. And maybe it was a slightly different style, as you said, and maybe that suited him a little bit more. But I always felt he was a decent defender, actually. You know, he seemed to have a real passion for the game. He seemed to love playing for Arsenal. And I thought he was okay, you know, and for whatever reason, I don't know what happened, but he seemed to, Arteta didn't seem to get on with him. I didn't rate him. I didn't want to pick him. You know, he bought a couple of defenders of his own with Pablo Mari and a couple of others, and he maybe knocked down the pecking order a little bit. But every time he was called upon, he never really let us down, I didn't think. I mean, he came on in the FA Cup final. That was his last appearance for us in the end. He came on briefly at the end and made a couple of big tackles and stuff like that, and did what he does. And yeah, I was really disappointed with the way it all kind of finished for him, really. But I mean, I'm glad that he got a move, because I think he needed a move and needed to play football. And, you know, obviously going back to his own country as well was probably a good move for him. So yeah, I mean, I know that if he does play tonight, I'm sure he'll have a point to prove to Arteta, certainly, won't he, to prove, you know, why did you treat me like you did? I've still got something to offer. So I'm expecting him to, he'll certainly be up for this game. I'm certain of that tonight, and we'll see what happens. Hopefully he won't be celebrating too many tackles tonight. But I always like that about him, actually, when, you know, obviously for him as a defender, I suppose it's like scoring a goal, isn't it? When you make a big tackle, it's the same as scoring a goal. And he did score a few goals for us as well. I think he scored six goals for us, actually, in his career at Arsenal in what, two main seasons that he played, I suppose, and bits and pieces after that. So he always popped up with some crucial goals. He had a big goal disallowed for us last season, actually, by VAR against Crystal Palace, which was a bit unfortunate. Yeah. So he would have had another one as well. But yeah, I always kind of liked him, really, and I still do. So I'm pleased that he's got a good move and it seems to be working. Is he playing okay, is he, for you guys?
Like I said, but I mean, they tried to ease him in because hasn't been playing. He's been playing under 23 football at Arsenal. There were not a lot of regular fixtures. And even though I think the level of under 23 football in England is potentially higher than the level of football in Greece. But, you know, we tried to ease him in. And then a couple of weeks ago, he played in a game where he, you know, in typical fashion, he tried to clear a ball off the line, and I think Semedo accidentally kind of kicked him in the face, and then he fell on the floor and hurt his shoulder and had to come off. And we thought, oh God, we thought the worst. And he's been carrying that for a couple of weeks. And then the next game, Semedo got a knee injury. He's out for 6 weeks. He has to go under the knife. He has to do surgery. So we're in a really precarious situation at the back, like I was saying earlier, and he's not 100% fit. He's literally been, after every challenge he's been making in the previous games, you kind of see him doing this a little bit and grabbing his shoulder. So he's not 100%. And now he's going up against players like Oba and Lacazette and Saka, and you're like, oh, we're a little bit worried about that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he played with Aubameyang, didn't he, at Dortmund for quite a number of years as well. So he obviously, and at Arsenal, so he knows his game really well. So I suppose if there's one defender that would know maybe how to deal with Aubameyang, you'd imagine it'd be him, probably playing against him in training for so many years. So, you know, that was always a concern that I had about this game, actually. But if he's not 100% fit, then perhaps that might make an impact, perhaps, if he does play tonight. If he has to play, like you said, you've got a few other injuries, that may make an impact. But, yeah, that'd be interesting to see how that goes, actually, him against his old mate Aubameyang. That'll be quite an interesting battle, maybe, because they're quite different players, aren't they? Because I say Socrates, as we said, he's quite a physical player, whereas Aubameyang's not that type of player, is he? He likes to run in behind and use his pace, which isn't Socrates' strength. So he's going to have to be strong with him, isn't he? Get tight and be strong. And, you know, if he does that, then he might well win that particular battle. I mean, if he kept Shevchenko quiet with him years ago, then that's not perhaps a good thing from our point of view. Another player, obviously, who did maybe probably an equally kind of amount of game time for both clubs, actually, was this guy. Do you remember him at Olympiacos?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Joel Campbell, yeah. I mean, he actually played 40 games for Arsenal throughout. He was there 7 years. He was out on loan a few times.
Yeah.
Scored four goals. And then he was only on loan with Olympiacos. Was it alone? Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. We would have liked to keep him.
Well, he played 43 games, scored 11 goals. So he obviously did well for you guys, didn't he? What did you make of him overall? And you was obviously pleased with how he was playing for you.
He was great. I mean, I don't think we really had much expectation coming into it when he joined. You know, I'll never forget the goal he scored against Man United. I was at that game at Karaiskagi when we beat them 2-0. And then, of course, the next leg is one to forget. Bloody former Arsenal player actually getting another hat-trick. Robin van Persie and David De Gea just having an incredible game to keep us out of the last eight of the Champions League. Joe Campbell was great. He, very, very well received, good memories. Like I said, that goal against United, it's epic. Really one of the biggest nights we've had at Karaiskagi, beating a team like a club like Man United in Greece, who we'd never beaten at home before they travelled to us. And they killed our undefeated record in Europe. Actually, they were the first team to beat us after 7 or 8 years of playing in Europe. Right. The first team that came to Athens and beat us. So that was a really memorable night. And then, of course, I remember him coming back to haunt us, that 3-0 game in 2015, which I was at. And I remember some of my fellow Olympiakos fans booing him when he came off. But no, it was largely applause when he came off. And he's a player that we would have liked to keep. But I know that Wenger had this kind of weird relationship with him. It was like he wanted him on the squads, but I don't know. I felt like he didn't really get much of a chance at Arsenal.
No, he didn't really. I mean, he had some spells in the team when I thought he did well, scored a few goals and looked a good player. But he never got a regular game. And I suppose for any player, particularly an attacking player like that, I think you do need to get some rhythm and you need to play regular games. And he didn't really get an opportunity at Arsenal. And he's another one who's gone on and done okay elsewhere. Like you said, he had a good spell with you guys and he's done okay in his career. But I never felt he was given the opportunity at Arsenal that I thought he maybe deserved with some of the performances that he produced for us. I always thought he could have done a job, you know. But he's the sort of player now, actually, that I think would probably do well at Arsenal under Arteta with the way that we play. It'd probably suit him maybe a bit better. But I guess just the way it's worked out for him in his career. But I know he did do well, obviously, with you guys. There was one more, and this one's a little bit dubious, shall we say. Do you know
that? My God. Is that Kazim Richards?
Yeah, Colin Kazim Richards, yeah. Now, it's a little bit of a dodgy one because he didn't actually play for Arsenal, but he was in Arsenal's youth system. The late 1990s into the early 2000s. He did kind of play in our academy before obviously going on. And I believe he played on loan for Olympiacos. Is that right?
I think so. I think he was playing for a Turkish club and it was a January transfer. And it wasn't... it was a bit forgettable, to be honest. I don't really remember much from him. Just one of those like failed January transfers.
As far as I'm aware, he played 9 games and scored 1 goal, actually, for Olympiacos back in, I think it was the 2011-2012 season, actually. Yeah. And I think he's at Derby at the moment in the Championship in England. So I think he's doing quite well there. He's another one one of several players who's come through our academy system, never quite made it at Arsenal and has gone on. Bit of a journeyman, I suppose. He's travelled around quite a lot. Like you said, he played in Turkey. I think that's where his family's from, isn't it, originally? I think he's Turkish descent, isn't he? So, I say, obviously, he's been on loan a few times and played in the lower leagues a little bit in England, I say the Championship and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a little bit of a dodgy one because he didn't actually play for Arsenal's first team, but he did. He was at the club for 3 or 4 years back in his younger days. So, but there's no one else I could find that's played for both clubs. Is there anyone else that you know?
There's the Yaya Toure story, but basically, like, you know, I know that Wenger tried to sign him, but there were some work permit issues, and I think I can't recall if Kolo Toure was already on the team, but basically, I know that Wenger was looking at him and Yaya actually went to England and started training with Arsenal, but there was the issue with the work permit. Then he ended up in Ukraine with Metalurg Donetsk, I think, and then we nabbed him up and he played with us for a year. you know, made his name. And then, you know, his agent, who's quite a character, he managed to kind of get him out rather precariously and take him to Monaco before he then shipped him off to Barcelona. So yeah, there's kind of a side story there.
Yeah, I mean, I know he did train with Arsenal, actually, because I think Kolo was at Arsenal at the time, and that was why I think Wenger was interested in Yaya. He was looking at him, and so he had him in for training. And it's a shame, really. He's another one who maybe got away from us, because he would have probably have been the sort of player that we needed, actually, a sort of a replacement for Patrick Vieira when he went and stuff like that. He could have taken on that role in the team, perhaps at that time, and for whatever reason, he wasn't able to get it done. And what a great career he ended up having as well, which makes it a little bit more annoying that we missed out on him, I suppose. But I suppose we could have maybe included him, because the only thing was, he wasn't actually attached to Arsenal. He was just training with Arsenal, yeah, I suppose, at the time for a bit. But it would have been a shame. It was a shame we couldn't have got him, because, yeah, he would have probably been, I say, what we needed, actually, at that time. And it would have been good for him to play with his brother at Arsenal as well, actually. That would have been. I think they not play at Man City together as well, didn't they? I think he was at Man City.
I think so, yeah.
Maybe he did in the end, but unfortunately not for Arsenal, which was a shame. Because I think if he'd come to Arsenal, because Kolo was there, he'd have probably stayed at Arsenal for years.
Yeah.
And it could have been great. But I say, another one who's got away that we can only look back on and think, what if we managed to sign him? There's been a few of them over the years that we've unfortunately missed out on. But I guess that's just
you've had your fair share of top players, you know. Okay.
No, we have, and you know, I mean, I said it a couple of weeks ago. We did a show, and I feel pretty lucky and privileged, actually, to have witnessed what I've seen at Arsenal. I know the last few years haven't been great, and it's easy to get down on it and think, you know, things aren't going very well. But I've been fortunate to see, like you said, so many great players that we've had, so many great memories of you know, winning teams and stuff like that. So if I sometimes feel bad that I feel sometimes a little bit negative about what's happening at the moment, but I suppose football goes in cycles. Like you said, a few years ago, Olympiacos maybe wasn't quite at the level. You've come back and you know, I'm sure Arsenal will come back as well at some point. It's just, it's frustrating at the moment. You know, maybe part of that's when you've seen so many great things, then you kind of miss it, don't you, when it's not there, I suppose. And, you know, we've had some great teams over the years, and unfortunately the current team isn't quite up to that level maybe, and it can be frustrating. But yeah, I mean, I'm grateful for what I've seen in the past, and we have had some great players, as you said. So, you know, yes, we've had a few get away, but I guess, you know, swings and roundabouts, isn't it? You know, we've had plenty, so we can't really grumble too much, I suppose. Just really want to come back, obviously, to the game tonight. I know you've got a few injuries, but we'll just maybe have a look at what we think about this. So yeah, the predicted lineups then. What are you expecting your team to be tonight? Obviously, with the injuries that you say you've got, are you expecting sort of any other changes from your recent kind of league lineups?
Generally speaking, in Europe, we like to employ a 4-3-3 formation. So generally, it will be José Sá starting in goal. He's a Portuguese international. He's a backup keeper to the Wolves keeper, who's the Portuguese number one. He's had a bit of a dip in form recently. So that again, isn't really boding much confidence at the back. But he will start under the sticks. And on the left, Oleg Rebchuk. He's a Moldovan international, youth academy product from Porto. Very good signing that we made in January, 22, 23 years of age. He can bomb up and down the wing all day long. He's very good in transition, both offensively and defensively. I think that's going to be a really interesting matchup with Saka or whoever starts on the right. I know that Arteta's like to play Saka on the right. I think that's going to be a real challenge for Oleg. I think that's, like I said, a really interesting matchup to watch tonight and see how Oleg does. In the center of defense is a real mystery right now, because we don't know if we're going to have Bar fit to play with Sokratis. That's really going to potentially mean a change of formation as well for us, because Yann and Villa will have to drop back. But under normal circumstances, to make it less complicated, it will be a 4-3-3 with Bar and Sokratis at centre-back. Kenny Lala, who's another January transfer signing from Strasbourg, he was rated by Y-Scout as the, well, statistically speaking, the second best right-back in the league in France. So that was a real steal for us. Don't know how he ended up in Greece, but we do have a strong French contingent in the back room with Christian Carambeau as our technical director. And of course, players like Mathieu Valbuena in our team, who, you know, personalities very well known in France, played for the national team, etc. Then in midfield, it will be Yann Mvilla, Andreas Bouchalakis and Madi Camara starting as a three pairing. Yann Mvilla, I know he's been linked to Arsenal forever, I think. He's a great player. He's very, very good. He's a holding midfielder that has great range on a pass. He can play a 30, 40-yard ball to feet, play the ball in over the top for the runners. He can really switch the game instantly and just, you know, win the ball and play one touch or just, you know, put his head up and switch the ball. He can play a pass in between defenders and midfielders. So he's a very important player, like a centerpiece player for us. Bouchalakis is he's our captain this year. He's had a breakout year. Left-footed player. It's a bit like Xhaka. He's a bit misunderstood, but he's really, really had a very, very good season this year with lots of goals and good performances all around. Madi Camara is a player that has been linked to Arsenal that we value at 25 million euro. He's one to watch for sure. I think the matchup with him and Thomas Partey is going to be very interesting in the midfield. It's going to be a big midfield battle today for sure. And up front, obviously, Youssef El Arabi, who you'll remember all too well from last year. Still 34 years of age. He's a killer. If he gets the ball in the box, 9 times out of 10, he's going to score. And then on the wings, it's a bit of a mystery. We don't know. We have a couple of options. Possibly Andreas Masuras starting on the right-hand side. He's more of a like tactically astute defensive winger that likes to get in on the far post to get some goals. But he's tactically very good. And I know Arsenal's strong side is the left side with Kieran Tierney. And whether it's Saka or Pepe or Aubameyang coming out on the left, you know, I see a lot of danger on that side. So I think Martins will want to shore that side up. Bruma is another option on the wing. Portuguese international. He's a bit hit and miss. Like he's very, very fast, very rapid. If you leave spaces in behind, he'll exploit them. And then, of course, the two jokers, I've spoken more than 11 players now, but you've got Kostas Fortunis and Mathieu Valbuena, who are like the playmakers in the team. And Valbuena is a 36-year-old veteran that can really whip a cross in. We like to whip balls into the box. And Valbuena is a very technical player, low center of gravity. He's, you know, on set pieces, he's very dangerous. And then Kostas Fortunis is... he's the man. He's the danger man. He's the guy. I'm not sure if he'll start, but don't be surprised if you see him come on in the 60th minute. And, you know, he's, for me, one of the most, if not the most talented Greek attacking midfielder I've ever seen. He'll get the ball and he'll run at defenders, make things happen. He has this look on him. If you look at him on the pitch, he's just ice cold. He has no expression. And, you know, he had the captain's armband a couple of years and you thought, like, this guy doesn't talk on the field. Like, why are they giving him the captain's armband? But he's one to watch as well.
Okay. I mean, Lambro's got a comment there about possible change of formation, maybe, depending on, obviously, fitness of Bar, perhaps. What do you think about that? Is that likely, do you think? Or do you think he'll stick with the same formation anyway, regardless?
I was toying with that idea of whether Andrutos might play in midfield, but honestly, I don't think so. Andrutos has only been tried and tested in midfield once or twice this year. He's a natural midfielder, but he's been playing out at right back. I think he'll be on the bench as an option because I think I think he might come on for Kenny Lala in the last 10 minutes. That's something that's happened in the last few games, in both PSV games, to give us a bit more pace in the last 10, 15 minutes if we want to inject some, you know, some speed down the wings. So quite possibly, though, like as Labro said, we might see a change to a 4-2-3-1 formation because we have a bit of a lack of midfield options if we have to drop Mvila back into midfield. So it's not an easy match for Mikel Arteta to prepare, not just because of the injuries that we have, and you know we're not sure what formations we're going to play, but also because when we played in the Champions League, the team was very different. We were playing with Jose Halebas as our left back. You might remember him. He played for Watford some years. He played for us some years before he transferred to Roma. And on the right, we had a Bayern Munich former legend, Rafinha, who came from Flamengo at 35 years of age. And our play last year, and you know, over the last few years, has been really, really focused on getting our wing backs forward and creating situations where we overload the wings, where we create spaces for the wingers to become inside forwards and get into the box and really stretch the opposition. And with those wing backs that we had during the Champions League, we weren't doing that. So I was telling you offline that the teams are, I don't want to say, you know, this team's better or worse, but the teams are different. And the changes that we made over the winter break, they've kind of brought us back into our own, to that football that we were playing last year, where we had Kostas Tsimikas as our left back. He was man of the match at Emirates last year. He's since then moved to Liverpool. He's, you know, playing second fiddle to probably the best left back in the world right now, Andy Robertson. And then on the other side, Omar El Abdelawi, who went off to Galatasaray. So, you know, losing those two pieces for us was really important. And if you think about it, Arteta's got basically 8 matches to look at to really get an understanding of the team and do his analysis. But the 6 games that he's going to look at from the Champions League, they're not really a fair reflection of how we're playing now. And then he's got the 2 PSV games, and then that's it. You can't look at the Greek games because they're not really, you know, who follows Greek games? It's hard to find tape. And we play different in Greece. In Greece, we play on the halfway line and we suffocate the opposition. That's not, if we play like that against Arsenal, we're going to get murdered. I think we're going to sit quite deep and possibly might let Arsenal have the ball, because from what I've seen from Arsenal, it's a team that can get forward very quickly in 3-4 passes. They can score. So tactically, it's a very interesting game. Interesting game between Arteta and Martins.
Yeah, no, I think it will be as well. I suppose, like you said, I mean, it seems like your team's gone through a bit of a change, certainly since we played you last year as well, maybe. So a few different players in the team and stuff like that. So, you know, it's not like we're going to maybe read too much into last season's games particularly. I mean, Arteta's been very unpredictable in his team lineups, actually, all season. You're never really sure what he's going to do, who he's going to pick in certain positions. You know, there's one or two players that seem to get picked every game. But other than that, sometimes you're never really sure. You know, like you said, on the left-hand side, we are generally strong. But recently, you know, we've been trying a few different players. I mean, Emil Smith-Rowe, I know he's injured at the moment, but he was playing on that left side a few games. You know, obviously Pepe's had a few games on the left. He's also played on the right. You know, Saka's been on the left. Aubameyang's been in that position. We've got Gabriel Martinelli, who's not really even played much lately. And he's dangerous in that position as well. So yeah. I don't know who's going to play there tonight, if I'm totally honest. It's, you know, personally, I would probably go with Pepe, because I think he's been playing pretty well lately. I'd maybe go with him on the left-hand side and Saka on the right. But you never know what Arteta's going to do. I do think sometimes when it comes to European games, it's a slightly different, like you said, you know, obviously European games for you is completely different to your domestic league. And I think it is for us as well. And I think we may play slightly differently than we would do in the Premier League game, for example. But I'm not expecting massive changes in our team. It's just, you know, one or two positions. I don't know who we'll pick on the left. I mean, Willian's been playing a lot. He's had a couple of half-decent games. He's been playing on that left as well. So there's another one that can throw in there. So you never know what he's going to do. You know, like you said, Thomas Partey in midfield, I'm expecting he'll play. He still needs to build his fitness back to proper levels. I still don't think he's quite there yet. Be interesting, actually, obviously, like you said, with Anvila in your team, he's a player that we've been interested in, or we were, for quite a number of years, actually. Similar sort of player, isn't he, in the way that he plays, yeah. I think, Thomas Partey. So that could be quite interesting. If he's playing in midfield, of course, you said he may be at the back tonight. We'll have to see. But yeah, I mean, the right back for us is an interesting one. Bellerin's been playing there, and then he was left out. And even at the weekend at Burnley, he was on the bench, and Callum Chambers came straight in. He hadn't played for like 18 months in the Premier League. So that was a bit of a shock. So I don't know what he's going to do at right back. Will Bellerin come back in? He's favoured Bellerin quite a lot. But I think Cedric wasn't well at the weekend. That's probably why he missed that game, I think. But he's been playing quite well there. So there's an option there to play. The two centre-backs, I think, will be David Luiz and Pablo Mari. I think they've been playing pretty well together over the last few games. I think they'll probably stay in. He's favoured Gabriel in some of the games, but I'm not sure. Gabriel seems to have gone off the boil after a good start. So that'll be what, obviously, Kieran Tierney's going to be left back. I think he's the only one you pretty much guarantee in his position when he's fit. Who's going to partner Partey in midfield? That's another question, because Granit Xhaka had that nightmare at Burnley, although he had been playing pretty well. We haven't got a lot of other options, really. Danny Ceballos, I'm not quite sure if he's up to it, if I'm totally honest. And he did make that big mistake in the last round against Benfica. Elneny's not really up to it either, I don't think. So there's not a lot of options there, unfortunately. That's where we need to strengthen. And obviously, we've got Odegaard. Martin Odegaard's come in number 10 position. Looks a good player, actually. I think this game might suit him. He had a good game against Benfica in the last round. A little bit more space you tend to get in a European game, possibly. So he'll probably be in number 10. And who's going to be up front? Will it be Aubameyang? You've got to imagine that Arteta will know that your injury problems at the back. He'll probably know that Sokratis isn't quite 100%. I would throw Aubameyang at him with his pace and try to cause him a few problems maybe that way. But we'll see. Obviously, Lacazette offers a slightly different threat, but he can score goals as well. So I think there's a few. It's going to be interesting to see what Arteta comes up with tonight, actually, because I say he's difficult to read. There's normally one or two that he throws in that really surprise you. So I won't be, you know, maybe Ceballos might come in midfield. You know, who knows? I don't know who's going to play on the left. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Willian, but I'd prefer Pepe there, if I'm honest, out of the two. And then, who's going to play up front? So we'll see what it's going to be. But I do think it's going to be a good tactical game, actually, because Arteta's a very tactical coach. I don't always think he gets his tactics right, but he analyses, like you said, he'd be watching, he'd have watched your games in Europe. He'll have an idea of how you're going to play, and we'll see. And obviously, he'll have last year in the back of his mind as well, I'm sure, as a lot of the players will, which maybe leads us on a little bit to the final section that we'll do. Always like to finish on the same thing, really. Obviously, the score prediction, which is the big one, I guess. From everything that you've said in terms of your injury problems and this, that, and the other, it's maybe makes a slight difference. I'm not really sure. I mean, what are you thinking for tonight? For, I mean, we will look at both legs, perhaps. But I mean, tonight, first of all, what are you thinking about the score for tonight, possibly?
I think keeping a clean sheet tonight is going to be a big challenge for us. But like I said, I think the squad is very tightly knit. And any player that comes into the position, I think they're gonna do a job. And I have full confidence that everyone's going to give what they have and what they don't have, you know, to help the team in that regard. It's going to be a complicated game. Frankly, very hard for me to make a prediction for tonight. If we manage to escape tonight without conceding, I think it will be a mini miracle. I do think we will get a goal. But overall, I think these two ties, they're either going to go in one way or another. It will be either comfortable or relatively comfortable Arsenal progression, or it's going to be very, very dramatic, like it was last year. So I think it's going to go either way.
Yeah, and I must admit, I'm kind of feeling that. Russ in the chat there said he thinks it'll be a draw. And Dave from the Out and Out Gunners podcast, he said he'd take a 1-1 draw. I predicted in my video yesterday a 1-1 draw as well. I know you've got a few injury problems at the back, but like you said, you know, you seem to have a good spirit in your squad, and I think that's important. And sometimes that can make up almost for maybe missing a couple of players. Everybody maybe needs a game a little bit more to help their mates out and stuff. And maybe Arsenal's lacking a little bit of that. We did show some in the last round, which was good to scrape through. But yeah, I mean, I think if we can score an away goal, that's going to be massively important. It wasn't quite last year in the end, but I'll be hoping that we can get an away goal at least, and then it does set us up for the second leg. I think it's going to be tight both games, actually. I wouldn't be surprised if it is quite similar to last year. I'm not expecting us. I know you said there's a possibility of us maybe comfortably going through. I'd be surprised if that was the case. If I'm
relatively comfortable.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm expecting two difficult games, two tight games. I think I say a draw tonight. I wouldn't be surprised if it was. Be nice if we can get a victory again. But if it's only a one goal victory like last year, I'm certainly not going to expect that. We've definitely done the job because we found that out to our cost before. So, yeah, I mean, I'm hoping we can go through. Because I feel it's massively important for Arsenal, the Europa League, because it's pretty much our only chance of being in Europe next season. You know, you're maybe comfortable in the sense that you've got the Champions League next season anyway, haven't you, regardless?
We're going to have to start from the second qualification round next season because our coefficients dropped so dramatically. So it's not a foregone conclusion. We're going to have to start playing football end of June or beginning of July again to get through the qualification rounds. And the team's been playing non-stop since July 23rd, 2019. The players have had probably 1 week break over 2 years.
Yeah, no, it has been a tough schedule for everybody, really, hasn't it, I suppose? But yeah, obviously, if you've got the qualifiers as well, I guess that's going to add to your problems, isn't it, I suppose, at the start of the season maybe. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how you feel about what Olympiakos' chances might be of going all the way in a competition. I guess when you get through to the quarterfinals, I know, you know, anybody's game really, isn't it? You know, you can get through, you never know, do you?
I mean, look, the last time we had a manager or managers that were in their third season, so that was Dusan Bajevic in 98. We got to the last eight of the Champions League. So that was in his third season. And then back in the 80s, it was Oleg Blahin, Ukrainian, well-known striker for the USSR. Back in those days, he came and managed us in the 80s. And in his third season, he got us to the last eight. I think it was the European Champions Cup at the time. And this is the third season for Pedro Martins as well. So the prognostics and the people that like looking at the history, they look at that and they're like, oh, you know, the signs are there and it might be another big one for Olympiakos and so on and so forth. But okay, all these things go out the window when you go out on the pitch and everything's decided over the 90 minutes until the referee blows the whistle. And we'll see. I don't know. Obviously, you know, if we manage to knock Arsenal out, I think that's going to be a major upset. And like I think, like I said at the beginning, everyone's going to be looking at us as a dark horse in this competition. But I do wonder when this team is going to start fatiguing. As I said, the guys have been playing 2 years nonstop. Let you know, one by one. Let's take today's match, next week's match, and let's see.
Yeah, I mean, I personally feel as though because of the pressure that we're under in this competition now to do well, because it's pretty much our only hope back into Europe, unless we can suddenly put together a run in the league, which is looking unlikely because we haven't really managed to do it all season so far. We need a good run of four or five victories, really. So this is looking at our only real route back into Europe. So I think there's massive pressure on Arsenal, actually, and that sometimes we haven't necessarily always performed well when the pressure's been on under Arteta. So I think that, you know, it's a big week for Arsenal now with these two games and obviously the derby match in between as well. I think it could be the three games that maybe make or break Mikel Arteta as our manager, actually, because I think that three poor results or certainly getting knocked out of this competition and not getting a result against Tottenham in between, I think you know, the pressure's going to be even higher on him then, you know. I mean, we did a show on about Arteta actually the other night on the channel, and I'm not convinced he's the right man to take the club forward from what I've seen so far. And yes, sometimes it takes time, and we haven't, you know, we've got a lot of other issues behind the scenes at the club, not just with the manager, but I do feel as though these three games, if we don't get the right results, then I'll be surprised if he sees out the season, or if he's here next, the start of next season, let's put it that way. If we don't progress in the Europa League, whether it's this round or whether it's the next round, if we don't make it through to the final, at least, I think his days might be over. But we'll see. I mean, when the draw was made, I've got to be honest, I thought it could have been worse from our point of view. You know, some of the other teams that are in it, I was quite pleased we'd missed a few of them. But also, obviously, you did knock us out last year. So I'm certainly not taking this for granted. And I know it's going to be two really tight, tense games. It's going to be nervy. But we'll see what happens. And, you know, like you said, take it one game at a time. Let's get today out of the way. If we can get an away goal, I'll be pleased. And obviously, as long as we don't get a big beat and an away goal, we don't lose 4-1 or anything like that. But I think if we get an away goal, I'll be confident, but cautious, shall we say, after last year. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, some lessons learned last year, probably. Yeah. And the big word everyone's talking about is revenge. It's becoming a real grudge match between us, isn't it?
Well, it seems to be. I mean, obviously, because you knocked us out last year, and we have tended, like we said before, we have met quite a lot in recent years, actually. All those 10 meetings previously have all been in, what, the last 10, 11 years, haven't they? So we seem to be playing almost on a yearly basis, really. Maybe there is a little bit of a rivalry built up between the clubs. And I say, you know, I don't really look on it as revenge, really. Yes, it is. But I just want us to get through to the next round because of how important it is. And it just so happens that you're the team that we've got to beat to do that. And yes, it would be revenge, wouldn't it, I guess. But last year's gone. Last year, maybe actually, I felt we had more of an opportunity last year to have won the competition. Actually, the way it worked out when it went to single games afterwards as well, because we won the FA Cup with single games and we seemed to rise to the occasion. And that maybe would have suited us last year. So maybe last year's defeat actually could have been more. We could have been in the Champions League this year had we done that. So, I don't really look too much on last year now. It's done. We need to learn the lessons from that. But this is a separate game. Like you said, it's a slightly different Olympiacos team. It's a slightly different Arsenal team as well. Let's be honest. You know, we've had a lot of changes in personnel in the team as well. So let's see what happens. I'm sure it'll be two good games anyway. I'm looking forward to it. I'm a bit nervous about it, if I'm honest, just because of the pressure that's on us. Hopefully it'll be a good game tonight. We can enjoy it. And then hopefully it sets it up nicely for next week as well, where it's all going to be decided again, hopefully in a different, better way for us for last year. Well, thanks for coming on today, Kos. It's been an absolute pleasure getting some more insight into our opponents over the next week or so. Just give your channel a plug again before you go.
Yeah, look, thanks for having me over. It's been really good talking to you today. May the best team win. I'll say good luck for your domestic competition, but for tonight, sorry. we're opponents tonight and next week, but at the end of the day, we're wearing the same colours, so we always have that in common. And actually, there's a big Arsenal fan base in Olympiacos fans, so you know that's something to bear in mind. But thanks again. You can follow us at Gate7INTL. They're on the screen there for more information about Olympiacos in English. Again, thanks very much. Looking forward to the game tonight.
Yeah, no, I am as well. So thanks for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure. Obviously there's a lot of Arsenal got a big Greek fan base anyway in London. So and I'm sure there's connections with Olympiacos along that there as well. So I suppose, although we're rivals, I guess, I think it's maybe more of a friendly rivalry, perhaps more than anything else. And maybe not for 90 minutes tonight, though. And but like you said, may the best team win, and let's just hope it's us. So thanks for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure. Stay tuned to the channel. If you haven't done so, please subscribe and please give it a like as well. I'm not sure if I'll be doing a watch along tonight, just because I'm still not feeling 100%. So I might give it a miss and prepare for the North London Derby on the weekend. But I will be putting up a review video tomorrow, a match review, looking back on the highs and the lows of the 90 minutes tonight, and then I say looking ahead then to the Tottenham game. I've got a live show tomorrow night, actually, the Tottenham warm-up show. So a lot coming up. So I might go watch them, I might not. I don't know. I'll decide a bit later on, a bit nearer the time. But stay tuned to 10 anyway. I say please give it a like. Please give it a subscription. Don't forget to check out the Gate 7 International guys as well. Some great stuff there on Greek football, Olympiakos as well. I say massive thanks to Costa for coming on as well. And to all you guys in the chat as well, the Norwegian Gooner, Dave from Out and Out Podcast, Joe, Russ was in as well, and Lambert, of course, one of the Gate 7 guys as well. So, yeah, thanks to everyone. Gunner Girl was in as well, Gary, Ryan as well, and Anthony, of course, from the Republic of Arsenal podcast as well. I know you guys were on there yesterday. So, yeah, thanks to all you guys. Thanks for watching. Stay tuned to chance. Enjoy the game tonight. Thanks again to Costas and everybody else. And in the meantime, come on, you Gunners. Come on.